Hi, and welcome to the Climate Minute, your source for insight and perspective on global warming news. My name's Ted McIntyre. Recently, I had the good fortune to visit the Caribbean island of Antigua. Now, if, like me, you're a little bit hazy about exactly where Antigua is, it's in the Eastern Caribbean, that is to say, closest to Europe. And if you imagine a stepping stone from Cuba to Haiti to the Dominican Republic to Puerto Rico and then down a long chain of small islands that begin with the U.S. Virgin Islands, et cetera, you end up at an island called Antigua. It's a charming place. Anyway, as I was walking around St. John's Antigua, I happened upon an art shop that had what for all the world looked like authentic art created on the spot. And I went in, looked around, and as I learned more, I found that all of the art, or at least much of the art in the shop, was made from found materials on the island of Antigua. Of course, that immediately perked up my interest because of the obvious connection to sustainability, right? We're all looking for sustainable ways to live our lives, and sustainable art seemed like a great metaphor. I had the good fortune to speak with the artist, Mr. Stephen Murphy, and one of his collaborative artists, a young man named Mark Branker. So we want to play that tape. It's not tape, of course, it's an audio file, but it's quite an interesting conversation. You should note that I have the presence of mind to bring my tape recorder, but did not have the presence of mind to find a quiet spot in the shop, so you hear the background music in the shop and various customers coming and going, but that should just give you confidence that this is an authentic, vibrant gallery. So let's listen in. So we're in the Zemi is the name of the
Zemi
shop, right?
Gallery. Zemi. Yes.
And I'm speaking with Mark.
Mark,
how are you doing?
Yes.
So you're an artist here in make producing things. So tell me, where are you from? What's your history? How did you end up in Antigua?
Well, my mom came here from Guyana about 13 years ago, and she decided to bring us here. But for me, I've always had a passion for making things, doing things with my hand.
Mm-hmm.
But I've never had that outlet to showcase it. So coming to Antigua, I met Stephen Murphy, who is a very good artist. I was impressed with the way he put colors together. And he decided to use me to make art out of scrap metal.
Mm-hmm. Which I find fascinating reuse. And part of the reason I'm so intrigued is the So tell me, what's the process? You find, how do you produce the art? And what's your role in it?
Basically, I would drive around the island.
Uh-huh.
And whatever scrap metal that catches my eyes, it just fascinates me.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh.
So I see, rather than looking at it as a piece of scrap, I see value.
Uh-huh.
Yeah,
uh-huh.
So I basically just go around the island picking up scrap metal.
And is it, I think I heard before, it's a lot of siding metal, corrugated sheeting,
mm-hmm.
right? And is there other stuff that's typical you find cast off?
Old refrigerators,
uh-huh. Uh-huh.
The driftwood. Anything that is basically scrap,
mm-hmm.
Old pieces of the stones, trees that are falling.
I guess questions. How did you come to see value in that? Because I think it's intriguing to reuse materials,
mm-hmm.
right? And my question for you and for Steve is, how did you come to that idea that that stuff is worth and can be repurposed? What was that story?
As I said before, it's a passion for art.
Uh-huh.
And doing things with your hands, actually making something out of nothing. Yes, because basically my life was like that. So I was brought from nothing to something. So that's the motivating factor for me. So every time I create a piece of from scrap metal or anything scrap, and I see it come to life and values being added to it, that motivates me to continue creating.
Do you find, and again, this is a question I'll ask Stephen, but do you think that the reuse of the material is a message in itself, or do you, so that the people buy the art, do they say, oh, this is has value because someone put value into something that was not meaningless, but wasn't valued before? Or do you think that it's all in your heart that you've taken this and that the viewer doesn't need to know where it came from, I guess, maybe? That, you know what I'm saying? Do you understand my question?
Yeah, I understand. I think life and art goes hand in hand. In art, we create something valuable out of scrap. And in life, we do the same thing. So there is a relation, but when persons come into the shop and they see that these things are done out of scrap metal, they actually put the value to it. Because they're actually looking at it as we saving the environment. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So a little piece of metal that is in a corner, rather than it being there polluting the environment, artists like me and Stephen, we pick that metal up, we put it into something that is desirable to the eyes, and that is where the value comes in.
I think it's very interesting, because I imagine many artists, someone who works in gold, right, they're starting from something that everyone, and then they're, you know, and so it's just an interesting conception. I agree with you in the idea of recognizing the value in the cast-off, right? The stuff you find. It's really, really an interesting interesting concept. So tell me, you were saying before that you paint it, or you do the shaping?
I do
or
the actual shaping, yeah.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. And how is that done? Is that sort of a hammer on a mold, or is it...
It's actually done with a normal shears.
Oh, you're cutting the shape out of things.
Designed to cut sheet metal. But not metal that is too thick that it cannot be cut with the hands.
Right.
But metal that is thick enough so that it can be manipulated and cut easily with the hand and the shears. So,
So describe some of these pieces. What I see look like almost African masks, right? And there's a surf. Was that surfboard cast off? No. That's a special. But yeah. So I see I see sort of seahorses. Mm-hmm. This is all from corrugated metal, right?
The seahorses are wood.
Okay.
Yeah, these are just scrap wood that we cut.
Pick up on the way.
Similar method we use with regards to the metal. But in terms of the metal, I could tell you about that. Stephen basically come up with all the ideas. I'm the skilled person behind doing the actual shaping.
Mm-hmm.
So he comes up with the idea. He does the draft on a plan.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And he gives that plan to me. I use that plan and I produce the actual shape.
And then do you paint it or does he paint
it? He paints it, yeah. I give him credit, 100% credit for that. I'm not involved in no way in the painting.
And how is the, are the, so what I'm looking at again, there are masks, they're sort of modern representations of African masks, very colorful layers of metal. They must be riveted together. Do I see screws holding things together? The different layers of metal?
The screws are holding the actual pieces to plywood backing.
Interesting.
But I also use a primitive method of riveting sheet metal together. That's where another piece of scrap comes in.
Right.
The power lines that the utility poles use, the actual copper, I use those as rivets.
So my impetus, what's behind is sustainability and the whole question of how fast we're using things up. And I think here in the Caribbean, you see very clearly that there's everything very high relief, the idea that the
do you find that the art that you have, does it communicate much with people here? This is a very wonderful shop, right? Clearly servicing people coming to the island. Right?
Well,
what's the impact on say people who live here?
Locally, a handful appreciate what we do, but I guess knowledge goes a long way. This is not it's basically a third world society we're living in. The more knowledge you have of the environment around you, is the better you'll appreciate stuff like these. Yeah. I've watched programs whereby it shows the waste in the world. Programs or documentaries that depicting how much we are wasting. Because of human greed, we accumulate a lot. And because of that accumulation, most of the stuff we buy, we don't need. So we find that a lot of this stuff that we buy ends up on land waste, and then we have to come up with other means of disposing of those things.
For me, it's kind of a metaphor for the whole reuse of everything, right? You're making this beautiful art out of stuff that is as I say, a metaphor for how society has to be ultimately, right? We have to reuse everything.
But another reason another factor that contributed to me using the scrap is culture. Where I grew up, South America, Guyana especially, we are taught to be resourceful. Resourcefulness requires that we use whatever we have around us and make something out of it.
Well, thank you very much, Mark, for taking the time to chat. Very interesting. I'm quite charmed by this place, and I appreciate your time time to chat.
Yes. So there's much more to the art piece than what meets the eyes. What meets the eyes is a beautiful piece, but there's a rich story behind
there's an ethos and an intent and a plan, and it's all very great.
Yes.
Very
so what great. Is produced is what is coming from within the person, his life's experiences, his knowledge of the environment around him, and his knowledge of people. Yeah.
That's great. Well, again, thank you very much.
You're welcome. Thank you.
So that was Mark, and then I was able to move on and have a conversation with the owner of the Zemi Art Gallery, Mr. Stephen Murphy. So let's hear what he has to say, what his conception is of the whole artistic endeavor.
I'm back with Stephen Murphy, right?
That's right, Stephen Murphy, yeah.
And you tell me your two sentences about yourself.
Well, I'm a born Antiguan. I was raised in Antigua till about the age of 14, 15, grew up here in Antigua, around a lot of American Peace Corps kids, and we used to use a lot of the stuff out of old building blocks and stuff, wood and lumber and stuff like that, because my dad was a contractor. We'd make forts at a very young age.
And you said before your grandfather was in this building?
Well, this particular building, which is right downtown St. John's, which encompasses the historical area of downtown St. John's, was this building here was actually a warehouse. Antigua being so close to one of the closest islands to Europe, England, all the supply ships, because we didn't have planes back then, would have come here, offloaded in the St. John's Harbor, brought their goods onto the mainland, and then they would have been housed here in Redcliffe Quay, St. John's, and then, so this was these were warehouses and hardware stores, and then they would have been distributed down the Caribbean chain by small caracou sloops that would sail them down to the other smaller islands.
So you have this amazing art shop here. Tell me, how do you produce art? What do you do?
Well, basically, I always wanted to be an artist when I grew up. I remember 5 years ago, being 5 years old, maybe just about 2 minutes up the street here at one of my grade schools, saying how cool it would be to be an artist. And I always stuck. There was always something. I was always doing something artistic in as I grew up. But when I reached about the age of 33, I went to art college. Mm-hmm. I got a degree in watercolor and came back to Antigua.
Cool.
Yeah.
And so, tell me, we were speaking before about the materials you're using here in the art, right?
Right.
Tell me that story again.
Well, basically, I'm an eco-artist now. And that happened by fluke. It didn't happen. I didn't plan to be an eco-artist. I did have a lot of environmental conscious when I was living in Canada because there was a lot of recycling going on, separate the food from bottles, and I always thought that was kind of cool. So we don't have a recycle program here in Antigua that's really sustainable. Well, but I became being an artist and to selling my watercolors. My watercolors weren't really selling as much as I wanted to, so the business obviously didn't grow. So we had a problem. So I quickly switched gears and started finding things in the environment that I could get, number one, for free, because I couldn't afford to be buying new material. So scrap lumber from houses being built, the foreman would give me the wood, scrap metals from companies that have shipping companies that have removed their metals, tin cans, things I could find, calabash gourds, which were easy at hand to find in the foothills here in Antigua and Barbuda, uh-huh. that we could have used to make quick and easy art.
Uh-huh.
Over a period of 9 years, I've realized I've become an eco artist, uh-huh. taking items out of the environment to produce and make art.
Is that how you define eco artist? Is that you
that's
using
how I, that,
local?
Yes, I'm using local scrap metals.
Uh-huh.
I find the beauty in it. When people think it's trash, I see money, I see dollar signs, and I see something that we can create to sell to tourists. Keep in mind, tourists they come off these cruise ships, they get here by plane, they've been to Barbados, they've been to Jamaica, they've been to Aruba, and basically they're inundated with items that they get from China. So you can buy the same item in Jamaica, instead you can buy in Barbados with the name of the island on the same product.
I noticed that.
Right. So, to be on the cutting edge of any business, it could be Microsoft, you have to come up or whatever. You have to come up with different ideas mm-hmm. to be unique, original, and the wow factor.
Right.
So that's where, and if when you tell people that this is eco-friendly,
yeah.
they are automatically, their eyes light up, and they are keenly interested in what you're doing.
You really find that.
Absolutely.
The audience reacts
people
to it.
Are more environmental conscious now than they were 30 years ago,
uh-huh,
20
uh-huh,
years ago.
Uh-huh.
So when you tell people this is the back end of a fridge, or this is a piece of metal that I got off an 18th century sugar factory plantation
uh-huh.
house,
uh-huh.
their eyes light up. I mean, we find pottery that are broken up from old sugar plantations here that we make fish sculptures out of, like a mosaic. And those pieces of pottery, they date back to the sugar industry here, 16th, 17th century.
So tell me, I see behind, describe what, because this is an audio thing, right?
Right.
Tell me about the star burst, I guess you would call that.
Right. Well, of course, a lot of my artistic or creative juices, believe it or not, come to me first thing in the morning when I wake up. So about 4:30, I'm laying there and I'm thinking, okay, if we could do this, and then it comes to me in a dream or something, and then I write it down, I sketch it out, I get up, or it basically flows from a project that I'm working on now,
okay.
and I'll start to think of something, hey, you know what, we can do this. And I'm very fortunate to be working with people like Mark Branker and other artists on island that don't call themselves artists, but I bring it out of them.
Is there a community developing of sort of, as you say, eco artists or people that are consciously or unconsciously using the local materials to make art?
People are awakening. And again, it boils down to economy. I mean, they can't afford to we live on an island. Everything is flown in or brought in by boat.
Yeah.
We can't go to Kinko's, we can't go to Costco's, we can't go to Hobby Lobby. So we have to use what we can find. So there are a lot of eco artists here.
Uh-huh.
on island that are using recycled material to make art, driftwood, plastics, cans, bottles, you name it. And there's actually, in the school system here, the teachers are actually teaching their kids to use material that is discarded to make art. And so it's big here, yeah.
So I speak with Mark before, put the idea to you. At least I see what you're doing as a metaphor for where society has to go, recognizing the value of the discarded stuff.
Sure.
Would you accept that as a kind of a, I don't know, not so much a theory, but I mean, does that make sense to you?
I think what we're at right now, it's the early stages, the advent, the genesis of what's to come. I mean, it's been done before, but I think our generation is now embracing it and moving forward with it. I think it's the beginning of something that's going to be the next big movement in the art world, if it's not already. It's already happening. I mean, musicians are actually becoming quite popular within their music and their education. Jack Johnson, for one, he's very into cleaning up the beaches and the oceans.
People
are starting to learn that, you know what, we're here for a short time, let's not leave the trash in it. And what I find also is that most of the stuff I get off the beaches, Mother Nature throws it back on the beach in a pristine way that you can actually use it to make art. I mean, I've seen driftwood mirrors. I've seen sea glass jewelry. We use sea glass to make jewelry here. Anything that comes out of the ocean has that worn and weathered feel to it. You know, it has those dimples and smooth finishes.
It's fascinating. I mean, there's a profusion of stuff on the wall. There's hanging. There's fish that have been crafted out of, I think it's one that's broken seashells all glued together into a fish. Conch shells. And there's, as we were saying before, African mask out of metal from building corrugation. It's a very cool thing. And up above, there's turtles.
Turtles made out of agave. Mark cuts those and I paint them. It's a joint effort. But I'd like to touch one thing before I go. And that is, we might be too late with the environment in regards to taking things out of the oceans and changing the environment. We live in a very dangerous hurricane zone area. We had two major hurricanes last season, Irma and Marie, and the environment, the total climate shift in this area is very fickle. So next year, I might not even be here.
So,
I mean, look at St. Martin, look at Puerto Rico. So next year, we might not even be here because all we need is one hurricane to come through here, and we're done.
You're fragile right on the edge.
So it's very important for people to know and understand that this business of tourism eco is very fragile and needs to be to be cared and looked into and diagnosed.
What I was going to say is, I mean, there are real people whose like yourself, whose lives are on the line
That
living all up and down this chain of islands.
That's right.
And they're under even more so than the people in California.
That's right.
Miami
we don't
Beach
have I-95 coming down the main through Florida here. Hurricane comes, we're stuck. We're on our own. So we're quite vulnerable.
Well, I want to thank you very much, Mark, for taking the time to chat. Really a pleasure.
That's Mark.
Steven, forgive me.
That's all right,
man. Thank you so much
for
taking the time.
It's been a pleasure. All right, man.
So there's Stephen Murphy, owner of the Zemi Art Gallery on Redcliff Key in St. John's, Antigua. You can, I think it's Facebook/ Zemi Art Gallery. You can see some images of the intriguing pieces of art. Anyway, there you go. It's a discussion about art from a guy who knows nothing about art. That is to say, me. it was intriguing. So you can check out, put up a link to some of this stuff at the blog at massclimateaction.org/blog. Of course, you can find this podcast on our Facebook page at @massclimateaction. You can listen to us directly on your smartphone using Stitcher, TuneIn Radio, Overcast, etc., etc. You can find us on the inimitable Apple Podcast. So we'll close the way we always close, by saying that because we recognize the necessity of personal accountability for our actions, because we accept responsibility for building a durable future, because we believe it's our patriotic duty as citizens to speak out. We must insist that the reckless policies of the Trump administration not be accepted as normal, and that the United States put a long-term and equitable price on carbon. So thanks for listening. We'll talk to you again soon. Bye-bye.
Very cool.